Hello, and welcome back to the podcast. I'm Hannah Ryder-Ross, and I'm the producer and technician behind the Great Canadian Aftermarket Podcast. As we wrap our first year, join us as we take a look back to 2021 with some of our top episodes. Our guests and colleagues reminisced about their inaugural vehicles in the My First Car miniseries. Here's Zara Wishloff with his first car story, and one of our most popular episodes of all time. As always, thanks for listening, be well, and we'll see you next year.
Hello, welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Andrew Ross. Now, the aftermarket is filled with stories of that first car that was coveted from afar and the ones that got away. Now, for Zara Wishloff, owner of Automotive Parts Distributors, APD, the story is not that dissimilar, except here's the kicker. He still has it. Hello, I'm Andrew Ross. Welcome to the Great Canadian Aftermarket Podcast, My First Car series. Now, my first car was a 1980 diesel Jetta that was certainly not the first one I drove. There's more about that later. There's some stories. But I'm joined here by Zara Wishloff. Now, Zara, owner of APD Auto Parts Distributors in Western Canada, still has his first car, believe it or not. So, Zara, tell me about the car. Tell me why you still have it. And tell us all a little bit about how it's helped form or shape your aftermarket career and life and whatever.
You bet, Andrew. Yeah, no, it's a story that I tell often, actually. So my first car was a 1967 Cougar. So as a high school kid, I wanted a Mustang, to be honest, if that's what I was in the market for. But any Fords and any Mustangs, I was looking at those years. I just wanted a muscle car. And what I did is kind of fell in love with the Mercury, like the Hideaway headlights, sequential signal lights of the 67 Cougar. Definitely got to me early. So that was my first car. Now, I drove that, and then obviously I had some other vehicles at the same time through my 20s. But that car was just a big part of my life. I restored it during high school. In fact, I mentioned before that I used to work at a truck stop parts department as a work experience in high school. And they liked what I had going on. So as I was working warehouse jobs and stuff, I used to work for them part-time for extra money. It was like I basically had three jobs for a while. And I made a deal with these guys that at the time we sold stereo equipment, and there was some really high-end stuff. And I wanted to put a stereo into this Cougar. So I basically had a deal with them where I put, and this would be early 90s, and I put probably $1,000 stereo into this car at cost back then. So I had 10 speakers all hidden. Everything looked stock and sub boxes and amps and all kinds of crazy stuff. And anyway, I did that. They allowed me to do that up front, and I worked for them for free for a year to pay it off. So it was a kind of a win-win situation for us. But so that was my car. The fortunate thing for me is I ran into so many people that had that story of, oh, I wish I never sold my first car. I wish I never sold my first car. Like, so I heard that enough times that I try to listen to people lots to not make mistakes. It helps me. And I heard the story enough that it was like, okay, it seems like a bigger deal. So at times when I could have, maybe used the equity or wanted to move on, it's like, no, it sounds like that will be a regret when I'm in my 40s or whatever. So I just managed to keep it all this time. So the fun part in my world is, so I've got two boys, they're spread apart by 10 years, but they both got to use my same car at their graduation days, which was pretty amazing. So
that's awesome. What color is it? 60.
It's a red. It's red. So red. It's again, red. I had,
of course it's red.
Of course. And the body was, it was a California car. So it's actually like never had any rust issues or any of those things. I did the kind of the theory of, I always wanted to look stock, but tried to, I did things like four wheel disc brakes back before that was really, that was hard to do back when I did it. So basically back then you needed to find a Lincoln Versailles, which is the weirdest and ugliest car almost that was ever made. But it had a Ford 9-inch rear end that had disc brakes on it, and it would actually bolt right up to the frame of either Mustangs or Cougars. And And so I did like modifications like that you would never know. Basically, the car looked like it was stock, but I was adding the performance. And through the years, a couple times I, you know, threw some money at it to make it fresh again or make it fun. So, you know, now it's not stock by far. It's got a stroker engine in it and put power steering. You know, you start to drive these newer cars that are fun. And then you realize when you are driving the old muscle cars, like they're always cool at first. And then the reality sets in, right? You got your oil's dripping, the steering's hard. It's not as glamorous after a little while once you start almost trying to daily drive them. So, I added some of those more modern feel, I guess, if you want to call it that, to make it funner to drive. And it was easy for me because I kind of had that template to work with. Like I probably wouldn't have bought, you know, what it's worth and then spent the money on it to add these things. But it kind of made it easy because I just had this thing that owed me nothing, and I could keep modifying it a little bit. So.
Sure. Well, it sounds like, you know, it serves a bit of a dual purpose. One, it's a nice connection to the past. And also a bit of a reminder of the past and what good used to feel like, and you know, how it maybe pales in comparison with today and how far automotive technology has come, right?
Oh, 100%. You respect it. But it's just a great way, just learning, you know, I kind of a self-taught do-it-yourself guy, and working on things like that also give you a little more confidence to and give you the basics of what's going on in these new cars now when you're working on it too, right? Because they are quite simple in the old times. But also just kind of, there's also no comparison to just like real steel and the feel of a car like that when you've been in them.
Yeah. Well, when you put your foot down, they kick, right?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. It's it's fun. They're fun to drive. I'll never regret. I used that same car. I think I was 18, but we, you know, I did the high school road trip with a buddy down to BC and down to Peach Fest and things like that. So the car has seen some good times as well through everything. But I don't drive it that often anymore. But it's a timing thing, or more that you need the time to get out and enjoy them. But I've definitely, again, if I ever heeded any advice, it was. That I was able to keep it, and I would recommend most people do the same.
Excellent. Good stuff. Well, thanks very much for offering your story here. Really good to hear that you heeded the advice of the folks, or at least learned from their experience of those who regretted having shuffled off their early favorite vehicles. So,
well, 100%. When people see these things selling for $150,000 now that they remember driving when they were 20. There's a lot of self-kicking going on out there for sure.
Good stuff. All right. Well, next time we get together, you know, maybe we'll go for a drive if we're allowed to, you know, get that close together.
Yeah, you'll have to do this a la Jerry Seinfeld, and we'll do first car drives.
Exactly. Well, you know what? Down the road, we'll see. All right. Thanks, everybody. That's Zero Wish Lost First Car. And join us next time. We'll maybe have some other interesting surprises and recollections. Take care, everyone.
Thanks, Andrew.
You're listening to the Great Canadian Aftermarket Podcast. Brought to you by the publishers of Indie Garage and Jobber Nation. Connect with us online at indiegarage.ca and jobbernation.ca, a brand of Chat Integrated Media.